The Arch-Chancellor polished his staff as he walked along. It was a particularly good one, 6 feet long and quite magical. Not that he used magic very much. In his experience, anything that couldn't be disposed of with a couple of whacks from 6 feet of oak was probably immune to magic as well.
"Don't you think we should have brought the senior wizard, sir?"
said Ponder, struggling to keep up.
"I'm afraid that taking them along in their present frame of mind would only make whatever happens," Ridcully sought for a useful phrase and settled for, "happen worse. I've insisted they stay in college."
"How about Drongo and the others?"
said Ponder, hopefully.
"Would they be any good in the event of a thaumaturgical dimension rip of enormous proportions?" said Ridcully. "I remember poor old Mr. Hong. One minute he was dishing up an order of double cod and mushy peas, and the next—"
"Kaboom?"
said Ponder.
"Kaboom?" said Ridcully, forcing his way up the crowded street. "Not that I heard tell. More like, lah, 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 scream, gristle, 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 crack, and a shower of fried food. Big mad Adrian and his friends any good when the chips are down?"
Probably not, Arch-Chancellor."
"Correct. People shout and run about. That never did any good. A pocketful of decent spells and well-charged staff will get you out of trouble 9 times out of 10.
9 times out of 10?
"Correct.
How many times have you had to rely on them, sir?"
"Well, there was Mr. Hong, that business with the thing in the bursar's wardrobe, that dragon, you remember."
Ridcully's lips moved silently as he counted on his fingers.
9 times so far."
"And it worked every time, sir?"
"Absolutely. So, there's no need to worry. Gangway! Wizard coming through!"
The city gates were open. Glod leaned forward as the cart rumbled in.
"Don't go straight to the park," he said.
"But we're late," said Ashfeld.
"This won't take long. Go to the Street of Cunning Artificers first."
"That's right, on the other side of the river.
It's important. We've got to pick up something."
People flocked the streets. This wasn't unusual, except that this time most of them were moving the same way.
"And you get down in the back of the cart," said Glod to Buddy. "We don't want young women trying to rip your clothes off, eh, Buddy?"
He turned. Buddy had gone to sleep again.
"Speaking for myself," Cliff began.
"You've only got a loincloth," said Glod.
"Well, they could grab it, couldn't they?"
The cart threaded its way through the streets until it turned into Cunning Artificers. It was a street of tiny shops. In this street you could have anything made, repaired, crafted, rebuilt, copied, or forged. Furnaces glowed in every doorway. Smelters smoked in every backyard. Makers of intricate clockwork eggs worked alongside armourers. Carpenters worked next door to men who carved ivory into tiny shapes so delicate that they used grasshoppers' legs cast in bronze for saws. At least one in every 4 craftsmen was making tools to be used by the other 3. Shops didn't just abut, they overlapped. If a carpenter had a big table to make, he relied on the goodwill of his neighbours to make space so that he'd be working on one end of it while 2 jewellers and a potter were using the other end as a bench. There were shops where you could drop in to be measured in the morning and pick up a complete suit of chainmail with an extra pair of pants in the afternoon. The cart stopped outside one small shop, and Glod leapt down and went inside. Ashfeld heard the conversation.
"Have you done it?"
"Here you are, mister. Right as rain."
"Will it play? You know I said where you have to have spent a fortnight wrapped in a bullock hide behind a waterfall before you should touch one of these things?"
"Listen, mister, for this kind of money, it had me in the shower for 5 minutes with a chamois leather on me head. Don't tell me that's not good enough for folk music."
There was a pleasant sound which hung in the air for a moment before being lost in the busy din of the street.
"We said $20, right?"
"No, you said $20. I said $25.
Just a minute, then."
Glod came out and nodded at Cliff.
"All right," he said. "Cough up."
Cliff growled, but fumbled for a moment somewhere at the back of his mouth. They heard the Cunning Artificer say,
"What the hell's that?"
"A mauler. Got to be worth at least. It'll do."
Glod came out again with a sack, which he tucked under the seat.
"Okay," he said. "Head for the park."
They went in through one of the back gates, or at least tried to. 2 trolls barred their way. They had the glossy marble patina of Chrysoprase's basic gang thugs. He didn't have henchmen. Most trolls weren't clever enough to hench.
"'This is for the bands,'
one said.
"'That's right,' said the other one.
"'We are the band,' said Ashfelt.
"'Which one?' said the first troll. "'I got a list here.'
"'That's right.' "'We're the band with Roxine,' said Glod.
"'Eh, you ain't them. I've seen them. There's a guy with this glow round him, and when he plays the guitar it goes...
"'That's right.'
The cord curled around the cart. Buddy was standing up, guitar at the ready.
"'Oh, wow,' said the first troll. "'This are amazing.'
He fumbled in his loincloth and produced a dog-eared piece of paper.
"'You couldn't write your name down, could you? My boy Clay, he won't believe I met—'
"'Yes, yes,' said Buddy wearily. "'Pass it up.'
"'Only it's not for me. It's for my boy Clay,' said the troll, jumping from one foot to the other in excitement.
"'How do you spell it?'
"'It don't matter. He can't read, anyway.'
"'Listen,' said Glod, as the cart trundled into the backstage area. "'Someone's already playing. I said we—'
Dibbler hurried up.
"'What kept you?' he said. "'You'll be on soon, right after Boys from the Wood. How did it go? Ashfelt, come here.'
He pulled a small troll into the shadows at the back of the stage.
"'You brought me some money?' he said.
"'About 3,000. Not so loud. I'm only whispering it, Mr. Dibbler.'
Dibbler looked around carefully. There was no such thing as a whisper in Ankh-Morpork when the sum involved had the word thousand in it somewhere. People could hear you think that kind of money in Ankh-Morpork.
You be sure and keep an eye on it, right? There's going to be more before this day's out. I'll give Chryso Praises $700 and the rest is all pro...
He caught Ashfelt's little beady eye and remembered himself.
Of course, there's depreciation overhead, some advertising market research, buns, mustard, basically. I'll be lucky if I break even. I'm practically cutting me own throat on this deal.
Yes, Mr. Dibbler.
Ashfelt peered around the edge of the stage.
Who's that playing now, Mr. Dibbler?
And you.
Sorry, Mr. Dibbler.
Only they write it, and you, said Dibbler.
He relaxed a little and pulled out a cigar.
Don't ask me why. The right kind of name for a musician ought to be something like Blondie and his Merry Troubadours. Are they any good?
Don't you know, Mr. Dibbler?
It's not what I call music, said Dibbler. When I was a lad, we had proper music with real words. Summeries are coming in, newly sing cuckoo. That sort of thing.
Ashfelt looked at And You again.
"'Well, it's got a beat, and you can dance to it,' he said. "'But they're not very good. "'I mean, people are just watching them. "'They don't just watch when the band are playing, Mr. Dibbler.'
"'You're right,'
said Dibbler. "'He looked at the front of the stage. "'In between the candles was a row of music traps.
"'You'd better go and tell them to get ready. "'I think this lot are running out of ideas.'
"'Buddy?'
"'He looked up from his guitar.' Some of the other musicians were tuning theirs, but he'd found he never had to. He couldn't, anyway. The pegs didn't move.
"'What is it?'
Said Glod.
He waved vaguely at Cliff, who grinned sheepishly and produced the sack from behind his back.
"'This is... well, we thought that is all of us,' said Glod. "'That, well, we saw it, you see, and I know you said it couldn't be repaired, but there's people in this city... that can do just about anything, so we asked around, and we knew how much it meant to you, and there's this man in the street of cunning artificers, and he said he thought he could do it, and it cost Cliff another tooth, but here you are anyway, because you're right. We're on top of the music business right enough, and it's because of you, and we know how much this meant to you, so it's a sort of thank you present. Well, go on then, give it to him.
Cliff, who lowered his arm again as the sentence began to extend, pushed the sack towards the puzzled Buddy. Ashfelt poked his head through the sacking.
"'We guys better get on the stage,' he said. "'Come on.'
Buddy put down the guitar. He opened the sack and began to pull at the linen wrappings inside.
"'It's been tuned up and everything,' said Cliff helpfully.
The harp gleamed in the sun as the last wrapping came off.
"'They can do amazing things with glue and stuff,' said Glod.
"'I mean, I know you said there wasn't anyone left in Llamedos that could repair it, but this is Ankh-Morpork. We can fix nearly everything.'
"'Please,' said Ashfelt, as his head reappeared. "'Mr. Dibbler says you've got to come. They've started to throw things.'
"'I don't know much about strings,' said Glod, "'but I had a go. "'Sounds kind of nice.'
"'I don't know what to say,' said Buddy.
"'The chanting was like a hammer.
"'I won this,' said Buddy, in a small, distant world of his own, "'with a song, Sione Bodda,' it was. "'I worked on it all winter, all about home, you know, "'and going away, see, and trees and things. "'The judges were very pleased. "'They said that in 50 years I might really understand music.'
He pulled the harp towards him. Dibbler pushed his way through the rabble of musicians backstage until he found Ashfeld.
"Well," he said, "where are they?"
"They're just sitting around talking, Mr. Dibbler."
"Listen," said Dibbler, "you hear the crowd? It's music with rocks in they want. If they don't get it, well, they just better get it, all right? Letting the anticipation build up is all very well, but I want them on stage right now."
Buddy stared at his fingers. Then he looked up, white-faced, at the other bands milling around.
"You, with the guitar," he said hoarsely.
"Me, sir? Give it to me."
Every nascent rock group in Ankh-Morpork was in awe of the band with rocks in. The guitarist handed his instrument over with the expression of one passing over a holy item to be blessed. Buddy stared at it. It was one of Mr. Wee Down's best. He struck a chord. The sound sounded like lead would sound if you could make guitar strings out of it.
"Okay, boys, what's the problem?"
said Dibbler, hurrying towards them.
"There's 6,000 ears out there waiting to be filled up with music, and you're still sitting around."
Buddy handed the guitar back to the musician and swung his own instrument around on its strap. He played a few notes that seemed to twinkle in the air.
"But I can play this," he said. "Oh, yes."
"Right, good. Now, get up there and play it,"
said Dibbler.
"Someone else give me a guitar."
Musicians fell over themselves to hand them to him. He strummed frantically at a couple, but the notes weren't simply flat. Flat would have been an improvement. The Musicians' Guild contingent had managed to secure an area close to the stage by the simple expedient of hitting any encroachers very hard. Mr. Cleet scowled at the stage.
"I don't understand it," he said. "It's rubbish. It's all the same. It's just noise. What's so good about it?"
Satchel Mouth, who had twice had to stop himself tapping his feet, said,
"We haven't had the main band yet. Are you sure you want to..."
"We're within our rights," said Cleet.
He looked around at the shouting people.
"There's a hot dog seller over there. Anyone else fancy a hot dog? Hot dog?"
The guild men nodded.
"Hot dog? Right. That's 3 hot dog."
The audience cheered. It wasn't the way that an audience normally applauds, with it starting at one point and rippling outwards, but all at once, every single mouth opening at the same time. Cliff had knuckled onto the stage. He sat down behind his rocks and looked desperately back towards the wings. Glod trailed on, blinking in the lights. And that seemed to be it. The dwarf turned and said something, which was lost in the noise, and then stood looking awkward while the cheers gradually subsided. Buddy came on, staggering slightly as if he'd been pushed. Up until then, Mr. Cleet had thought that the crowd was yelling. And then he realized that it had been a mere murmur of approval compared to what was happening now. It went on and on while the boy stood there, head bowed.
"But he's not doing anything," Cleet shouted into Satchel Mouth's ear. "Why are they all cheering him for not doing anything?"
"Can't say, sir," said Satchel Mouth.
He looked around at the glistening, staring, hungry faces, feeling like an atheist who has wandered into Holy Communion. The applause went on. It redoubled again when Buddy slowly raised his hands to the guitar.
"He's not doing anything!" screamed Cleet.
He's got us bang to rights, sir,"
Satchel Mouth bellowed. He's
not guilty of playing without belonging to the guild if he doesn't play."
Buddy looked up. He stared at the audience so intently that Cleet craned to see what it was that the wretched boy was staring at. It was nothing. There was a patch of it right in front of the stage. People were packed tight everywhere else, but there, right in front of the stage, was a little area of cleared grass. It seemed to rivet Buddy's attention.
"Wah!"
Cleet rammed his hands over his ears, but the force of the cheering made his head echo. And then, very gradually, layer by layer, it died away. It yielded to the sound of thousands of people being very quiet, which was somehow, Satchel Mouth thought, a lot more dangerous.
Glod glanced at Cliff, who made a face. Buddy was still standing, staring at the audience.
"If he doesn't play," Glod thought, "then we've had it."
He hissed at Ashfelt, who sidled over.
"Is the cart ready?"
"Yes, Mr. Glod. You filled up the horses with oats?"
"Just like you said, Mr. Glod. Okay."
The silence was velvet, and it had that quality of suction found in the patrician's study and in holy places and deep canyons, engendering in people a terrible desire to shout or sing or yell their name. It was a silence that demanded, "Fill me up." Somewhere in the darkness someone coughed. Ashfelt heard his name hissed from the side of the stage. With extreme reluctance he sidled over to the darkness where Dibbler was frantically beckoning him.
"You know that bag?" said Dibbler.
"Yes, Mr. Dibbler, I put it..."
Dibbler held up two small but very heavy sacks.
"Tip these in and be ready to leave in a big hurry."
"Yes, that's right, Mr. Dibbler, because Glod said..."
"Do it now."
Glod looked around. "If I throw away the horn and helmet and this chainmail shirt," he thought, "I might just get out of here alive. What's he doing?" Buddy put down the guitar and walked into the wings. He returned before the audience had realized what was happening. He was carrying the harp. He stood facing the audience. Glod, who was closest to him, heard him murmur,
"Just once. Come on, just one more time, and then I'll do whatever you want. See? I pay for it."
There were a few faint chords from the guitar.
Buddy said, "I mean it, see?"
There was another chord.
"Just once."
Buddy smiled at an empty space in the audience and began to play. Every note was as sharp as a bell and as simple as sunlight, so that in the prism of the brain it broke up and flashed into a million colours. Glod's mouth hung open, and then the music unfolded in his head. It wasn't music with rocks in, although it used the same doors. The fall of the notes conjured up memories of the mine where he'd been born, and dwarf bread just like Mum used to hammer out on her anvil, and the moment when he'd first realized that he'd fallen in love. He'd still got the nugget somewhere. He remembered life in the caves under Copperhead before the city had called him, and more than anything else he wanted to be home. He'd never realized that humans could sing whole. Cliff laid aside his hammers. The same notes crept into his corroded ears, but in his mind they became quarries and moorlands. He told himself, as emotion filled his head with its smoke, that right after this he was going to go back and see how his old mum was, and never leave ever again. Mr. Dibbler found his own mind spawning strange and disturbing thoughts. They involved things you couldn't sell and shouldn't pay for. The lecturer in recent runes thumped the crystal ball.
The sound is a bit tinny, he said.
"Get out of the way! I can't see," said the dean.
Recent runes sat down again. They stared at the little image.
"This doesn't sound like music with rocks in,"
said the bursar.
"Shut up,"
said the dean. He blew his nose. It was sad music, but it waved the sadness like a battle flag. It said the universe had done all it could, but you were still alive. The dean, who was as impressionable as a dollop of warm wax, wondered if he could learn to play the harmonica. The last note faded. There was no applause. The audience sagged a little as each individual came down from whatever reflective corner they'd been occupying. One or two of them murmured things like,
"Yeah, that's how it is,"
or
"You and me both, brother."
A lot of people blew their noses, sometimes on other people. And then reality snuck back, as it always does. Glod heard Buddy say very quietly,
"Thank you."
The dwarf leaned sideways and said out of the corner of his mouth,
"What was that?"
Buddy seemed to shake himself awake.
"What? Oh, it's called Sioni Bodda. What do you think?"
"It's got whole," said Glod. "It's definitely got whole."
Cliff nodded. When you're a long way from the old familiar mine or mountain, when you're lost among strangers, when you're just a great big aching nothingness inside, only then can you really sing whole.
"She's watching us,"
whispered Buddy.
"The invisible girl," said Glod, staring at the empty grass.
"Yes."
"Oh, yes. I can definitely not see her. Good. And now, if you don't play music with rocks in this time, we're dead."
Buddy picked up the guitar. The strings trembled under his fingers. He felt elated. He'd been allowed to play it in front of them. Everything else was unimportant now. Whatever happened next didn't matter.
"You ain't heard nothing yet," he said. He stamped his foot. "1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Glod had time to recognize the tune before the music took him. He'd heard it only a few seconds before, but now it swung. Ponder peered into his box.
"I think we're trapping this, Arch-Chancellor," he said, but I don't know what it is."
Ridcully nodded and scanned the audience. They were listening with their mouths open. The harp had scoured their souls, and now the guitar was hot-wiring their spines. And there was an empty patch near the stage. Ridcully put a hand over one eye and focused until the other eye watered, and then he smiled. He turned to look at the Musicians' Guild and saw to his horror that Satchelmouth was raising a crossbow. He seemed to be doing it with reluctance. Mr. Cleet was prodding him. Ridcully raised a finger and appeared to scratch his nose. Even above the sound of the playing he heard the twang as the crossbow's string broke, and to his secret delight a yelp from Mr. Cleet as a loose end caught his ear. He hadn't even thought of that.
"I'm just an old softy. That's my trouble," Ridcully said to himself.
Hit. "You know, this was an extremely good idea," said the bursar, as tiny images moved in the crystal ball. "What an excellent way to see things. Could we, perhaps, have a look at the opera house?"
"How about the Skunk Club in Brewer Street?" said the senior wrangler.
"Why?" said the bursar.
"Just a thought," said the senior wrangler quickly. "I've never been in there at all, in any way, you understand?"
We really shouldn't be doing this," said the lecturer in recent runes. "It's really not a proper use of a magic crystal."
"I can't think of a better use of a magic crystal," said the dean, "than to see people playing music with rocks in."
The Duckman, Coffin Henry, Arnold Sideways, Foul Old Ron, and Foul Old Ron Smell, and Foul Old Ron's dog, ambled around the edges of the crowd. Pickings had been particularly good. They always were when Dibbler's hot dogs were on sale. There were some things people wouldn't even eat under the influence of music with rocks in. There were some things even mustard couldn't disguise. Arnold gathered up the scraps and put them in a basket on his trolley. There was going to be the prince of a primal soup under the bridge tonight. The music had poured over them. They ignored it. Music with rocks in was the stuff of dreams, and there were no dreams under the bridge. Then they'd stopped and listened, as new music poured out over the park and took every man and woman and thing by the hand and showed him or her or it the way home. The beggars stood and listened, mouths open. Someone looking from face to face, as if anyone did look at the invisible beggars, would have had to turn away. Except for Mr. Scrub. You couldn't turn away there. When the band were playing music with rocks in again, the beggars got back down to earth, except for Mr. Scrub. He just stood and stared. The last note rang out. Then, as the tsunami of applause began to roll, the band ran off into the darkness. Dibbler watched happily from the wings at the other side of the stage. He'd been a bit worried for a while there, but it all seemed back on course now. Someone tugged at his sleeve.
"What are they doing, Mr. Dibbler?"
Dibbler turned.
"Scum, isn't it?" he said.
"It's Crash, Mr. Dibbler."
"What they're doing, Scum, is not giving the audience what they want," said Dibbler. "Superb business practice. Wait till they're screaming for it and then take it away. You wait. By the time the crowd is stamping its feet, they'll come back prancing on again. Superb timing. When you learn that sort of trick, Scum..."
"It's Crash, Mr. Dibbler."
"Then maybe you'll know how to play music with rocks in. Music with rocks in, Scum. Crash isn't just music," said Dibbler, pulling some cotton wool out of his ears. "It's lots of things. Don't ask me how."
Dibbler lit a cigar. The din made the match flame flicker.
"Any minute now," he said, "you'll see."
There was a fire that had been made of old boots and mud. A grey shape circled it, snuffling excitedly.
Get on. "Mr. Dibbler's not going to like this," moaned Ashfelt. "Tough one for Mr. Dibbler," said Glod, as they hauled Buddy into the cart. "Now I want to see those hoofs spark. Know what I mean?"
"Head for Quirm," said Buddy, as the cart jerked into motion. He didn't know why, it just seemed the right destination.
"Not a good idea," said Glod. "People probably want to ask questions about that cart I pulled out of the swimming pool."
"Head towards Quirm."
"Mr. Dibbler's really not going to like this," said Ashfelt.
as the cart swung out onto the road.
"Any moment now,"
said Dibbler.
"I expect so," said Crash, "because they're stamping their feet, I think."
There was indeed a certain thumping under the cheers.
"You wait,"
said Dibbler.
"They'll judge it just right. No problem. Ah!
You're supposed to put your cigar in your mouth the other way round, Mr. Dibbler,"
said Crash meekly. The waxing moon lit the landscape as the cart bounced out of the gates and along the Quirm Road.
"How did you know I've got the cart made ready?"
said Glod, as they landed after a brief flight.
"I didn't,"
said Buddy.
"But you ran out."
"Yes. Why?"
"It was just time."
"Why do you want to go to Quirm?" said Cliff.
I can get a boat home, can't I?" said Buddy.
"That's right.
A boat home."
Glod glanced at the guitar. This felt wrong. It couldn't just end, and then they'd just walk away. He shook his head. What could go wrong now?
"Mr. Dibbler's really not going to like this,"
moaned Ashfeld.
"Oh, shut up," said Glod. "I don't know what he's not going to like."
"Well, for a start," said Ashfeld, "the main thing, the thing he won't like most, is, we've got the money."
Cliff reached down under the seat. There was a dull clinking noise, of the sort made by a lot of gold keeping nice and quiet. The stage was trembling with the vibration of the stamping. There was some shouting now. Dibbler turned to Crash and grinned horribly.
"Hey, I've just had a great idea," he said.
A tiny shape swarmed up the road from the river. Ahead of it, the lights of the stage glowed in the dusk. The Arch-Chancellor nudged Ponder and flourished his staff.
"Now," he said, "if there's a sudden rip in reality and horrible screaming things come through, our job is to..." He scratched his head. "What is it the Dean says? Kick a righteous donkey."
"Some righteous ass, sir," said Ponder. "He says, kick some righteous ass."
Ridcully peered at the empty stage.
"I don't see one," he said.
The four members of the band sat up and stared straight ahead over the moonlit plain. Finally, Cliff broke the silence.
"How much?"
"Best part of $5,000. $5,000?
Cliff clamped his huge hand over Glod's mouth.
"Why?"
said Cliff as the dwarf squirmed.
"More bottle, roro."
"I got a bit confused," said Ashfeld. "Sorry."
"We'll never get far enough," said Cliff. "You know that. Not even if we die."
"I tried to tell you all," Ashfeld moaned. Maybe we could take it back."
"How can we do that?"
"Glod," said Cliff, in a reasonable tone of voice, "I'm going to take my hand away, and you're not to shout, right?"
"Okay."
"Take it back! $5,000!
"I suppose some of that is ours," said Cliff, tightening his grip.
"I know I haven't had any wages," said Ashfeld.
"Let's get to Quirm," said Buddy urgently. "We can take out what's ours and send the rest back to him."
Cliff scratched his chin with his free hand.
"Some of it belongs to Chryso Praise," said Ashfeld. "Mr. Dibbler borrowed some money off him to set up the festival."
"We won't get away from him," said Cliff, "except if we drive all the way to the rim and chuck ourselves over. Even then only maybe."
We could explain, couldn't we?" said Ashfeld.
A vision of Chryso Praise's gleaming marble head formed in their vision.
"No."
"Quirm, then," said Buddy.
Cliff's diamond teeth glittered in the moonlight.
"I thought," he said, "I thought I heard something on the road back there. Sounded like harness."
The invisible beggars began to wander away from the park. Foul old Ron's smell had stayed on for a while because it was enjoying the music, and Mr. Scrub still hadn't moved.
"We got nearly 20 sausages,"
said Arnold sideways. Coffin Henry coughed a cough with bones in it.
"Bugger 'em," said foul old Ron. "I told 'em, spying on me with rays."
Something bounded across the trodden turf towards Mr. Scrub, ran up his robe, and grabbed either side of his hood with both paws. There was the hollow sound of two skulls meeting. Mr. Scrub staggered backwards.
Squeak!
Mr. Scrub blinked and sat down suddenly. The beggars stared down at the little figure jumping up and down on the cobbles. Being of an invisible nature themselves, they were naturally good at seeing things unseen by other men, or in the case of Fowl or Ron, by any known eyeball.
"That's a rat,"
said Duckman.
"Bugger it,"
said Fowl or Ron. The rat pranced in circles on its hind legs, squeaking loudly. Mr. Scrub blinked again, and Death stood up.
"I have to go," he said.
"Squeak!"
Death strode away, stopped, and came back. He pointed a skeletal finger at the Duckman.
"Why," he said, "are you walking around with that duck?"
"What duck?"
"Ah, sorry,"